Well, good afternoon, everyone. Good to see all of you. Good to see your smiling faces. Is it not a gorgeous day today? In the fourth chapter of Genesis, we read a familiar yet rather disturbing account about Cain taking the life of his brother Abel. As the story goes, both Cain and Abel gave an offering to God. Abel's was accepted and Cain's was rejected. And rather than take correction from God, Cain's response was resentment. He then became jealous of Abel. Jealousy turned to anger, anger turned to hatred, and he took his brother's life. God searched Cain out and said, "Where is your brother?" And Cain's response is, "I do not know where my brother is. Am I my brother's keeper?" Cain's own response, his very words, indicted his character. So here we have Cain, devoid of love, without remorse. Cain's a poignant reminder of what the human condition can be if it's absent from the influence of God. So Cain, I guess you could say, personifies the anti-keeper, the opposite of the keeper. He's a taker. And we know that to be a keeper of others, when we read Scripture, is much more than someone who just doesn't do direct harm to somebody. Keeper has a much greater responsibility, a much greater calling. The Bible's pretty clear about what our construct is, what we're aiming for in being the keeper of others, and I'd like to start by turning to 1 John 3, verse 16. 1 John 3, verse 16. The Scriptures today are going to be very familiar accounts to all of us, but I'd like to just review them in the context of being a keeper. 1 John 3, 16 reads, "By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for our brethren." We start seeing that the keeper of others is a caregiver, a protector, a preserver of life, physical and spiritual, even at their own cost, the cost even of their own physical life. So this afternoon, I'd like to take a look at some of the challenges and some of the conditions that we need to be part of in being a keeper of others. And I'd like to start by reminding us that, for one, being a keeper is, frankly, a lot of hard work. And the Bible is very clear about predicting a time when many keepers will falter. And let's turn to Matthew 24, verse 12. Again, a very familiar account. Matthew 24, verse 12. And we read, "And because lawlessness will abound," because there's a condition where in the course of time things are going to get more and more crazy, "the love of many will wax cold," will actually grow cold in the New King James Version. "The love of many will grow cold at the end because iniquity abounds, because there's a lot of lawlessness and sin, and because people are going to feel and continue to be more sensitive to being careful, being tentative. I mean, how do you love? And whom do you love? And how do you show it?" It becomes more and more cloudy as things get more and more intense in the world. I mean, we're in a horrible age. It's real easy to be fearful, to be withdrawn, and not to be sure how we actually apply our love to others. We become less and less inclined to take risks. Yet, we are called to be keepers. So I have some questions I'd like each of us to ask ourselves today, and that is, are we really engaged in the lives of others? I mean, we really make their problems our own and their issues our own as well. And I don't mean getting so involved in people's lives where it paralyzes you and you can't do anything. That's not right. I'm not talking about imbalance in this area. But I'm talking about the ability to feel when other people feel, the ability to care when they need someone to care for them, and have our love, our feelings for each other grown cold, or are they less warm than they used to be? Have we ever felt a sense of being hardened, maybe a little indifferent? Or just frankly, do we really know each other? Do we really know what's going on in each other's lives? Several months ago, I was at dinner with some friends, And this really interesting dynamic took place. All the guys ended up in the living room, and all the ladies ended up around the kitchen table. And anyway, it's really funny. Well, I think it's funny. They're in a tight circle. They're all talking. They're talking about their relationships. They're talking about their hardships. They talked about courage. They talked about trials. They talked about their feelings, their triumphs, their hopes, their dreams. And there was laughter. And then there was silence when they were sharing something intimate with one another. And they talked about how they were going to pray for one another. And this was all during the 3 minutes I sat in the kitchen grabbing food. And then I go back to the living room, and with the guys. And we never got past the weather and a couple of hobbies. And that's all the farther we got. Now here, I'm not here to pick on the guys. I'm just saying I think the ladies are just much better at this. They knew each other. And they were sharing everything. And you know, there's a buzz and there was excitement. And it's just a neat thing to witness. And I think that's just something that we need to get better at. They all knew what each other was doing. I went back to the living room just to discover I didn't know really anything about what the guy I didn't know. But I do believe that the keeper, seeks to understand the needs of others. They're in touch with them. They understand them. And if you want to feel for somebody, you got to understand them. You got to know. There's just no way around it. And this leads to an important point. And something else that I witnessed in there as well. The keeper does not just look out for, does not just pray for somebody during a time of crisis. They don't limit their love, their compassion, their conveyance of concern only when somebody is hurting. You don't have to be afflicted. We don't have to be in pain. We don't have to be in the middle of a trial to pray for one another. You know? We can all pray that God keep us, that God continues to provide for each of us and one another in the congregation in good times and bad times. And I just really noticed that during this little window of 3 minutes in the kitchen. And, you know, it's all consistent with the Bible, too. If you recall, Paul, when he was talking to the in the book of Colossians, that he prayed for them always. He didn't just pray for them during, again, times of sorrow or times of trial. He prayed for them always. I'd like us to turn to 1 Corinthians 12, verses 25 and 26. 1 Corinthians 12, 25 and 26. We see that Apostle Paul is dealing with the church at Corinth, which, as we know, had their set of challenges. And the point runs very deep here about being a keeper. Let's start in verse 25. That there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. And we know that means there shouldn't be anything that we do that causes a split, that causes division. But in terms of being a keeper, we shouldn't pray for one person and not pray for another. Shouldn't selectively do that. There shouldn't be anyone who doesn't give care to those who are in need when they're able to. It should be something that we do across the board. And I recognize, and I think we all do, that it's much easier to have compassion and to pray for those you know. Oftentimes we're asked to pray for those around the world, and you know, we recognize that if somebody's hurting, we could, you know, understand that they have a condition, that they're in pain, and then we may at least temporarily understand that they have family and that there is a crisis and they do need prayer and God's help. But it is not as easy to deal with that as it is for someone that you really, really know. And I think that there's an important point that, although I do not discount whatsoever praying for all people, but it should not excuse us from really knowing and understanding everybody in this congregation and praying for them. It's just a very, very important thing that one is not done without the other. The first half of verse 26 reads, "And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it." I say that this verse really, really does cut to the core. It's sort of the yardstick of being a keeper. And this verse, I think, really speaks to a condition. It speaks to a condition where understanding, compassion, and love actually allow us to suffer along with someone else. I mean, when they hurt, we hurt. When they're sick, we feel. in our gut, a sense of loss. And if they're not here with us, we feel a void. These are the things we should feel. It's an indication that we're on board with being a keeper, to really feel their pain, to suffer along with them. And it's not just limited to feelings alone. It must also extend to our actions in providing for the needs of others. We're going to circle back right now to 1 John 3, verse 17 now. We read 16 earlier. 1 John 3, 17, and we'll read through 19. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? Or how can he be a keeper? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. And by this we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before him. Now, being a keeper, it's no easy task. It can actually be somewhat daunting if you think about it. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of diligent prayer for everyone, every member of the body. And it requires us to care for the needs. It requires action. I'd like to conclude in the 6th chapter of Galatians, verse 2, another very familiar scripture to all of us. Galatians 6, verse 2, bear one another's burdens, and in so doing, fulfill the law of Christ. We're all called to be keepers. The keeper cares for all and bears their burdens. The keeper seeks understanding, is diligent in prayer, always, in good times and in bad times. Keeper looks after each other's needs, and a true keeper will keep the love of God alive for the brethren and never let it grow cold. You know, we read earlier that no greater love is anyone than he who would lay down his life for his brethren. You know, Christ's perfect sacrifice is the ultimate example of that. You know, in the end, there may be a time when any of us could be tested this way with our very lives. But in the meantime, what are our lives really but slices of time, pieces of time, one after another? I don't know how long I'm going to be able to keep going in time, and I don't know if any of us really know that. But I think the point is that if you recognize that your life is time, and you know you have a limited amount of it, may we all just think and use it to love and keep one another.